Now you have to be sure to be sure, because once you put it out there, the audience will take it in. They will connect. And once they connect to it, it's theirs. And once it's theirs, that shit is gone forever.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 244 for the week of April 1st, 2019. I am Pit of Man's Fears, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Suicide by Flop, Sarah D. Bunting.
Something cheap and brown, no ice.
Air Marshal Tara Ariano.
This guy's really into his podcast.
And Easter Egg on the Beach, Will Hines.
Hey, I recognize that.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. We are pleased to welcome from stage and screen, literally, Will Hines. Hello, Will.
Hello, Will.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me. Thank you.
We are here to talk about CBS All Access's remake of The Twilight Zone, or revival, because I guess not every episode is a remake of an episode of the original series. And fortunately for us, the two episodes that have dropped are very relevant to our guest's experience. Will is an actor, a sketch comic, and the first episode of the two is called The Comedian and stars Kumail Nanjiani. As someone who accidentally gets into a devil's bargain to become famous. And so, Will, let's start with the obvious question. Who gave you your Faustian offer to become hugely famous and successful in the world of comedy?
It was not Tracy Morgan. It was okay. Gary Kroger from the Dick Ebersol cast of SNL. And a small parts on Curb Your Enthusiasm sidled up to me at a bar and was like, would you like to have almost 15 lines total in various sitcoms? you just got to put yourself out there. And and before he was even finished, I was like, whatever you're selling, I'll give you my soul.
Okay, so what happens?
All strangers.
What happens is Kumail Nanjiani plays a somewhat failing bad stand-up comic. He meets this guy who's played by Tracy Morgan at the comedy club. And the advice that he gets is that you have to talk about your real life, but then once you do, it's gone. And I thought this was particularly interesting to talk to you about because you do improv comedy and that literally is how it goes. Like once you do a show, it kind of is gone forever.
Yeah.
So how did you react to this episode? How did it strike you?
Well, I loved the way it looked and I loved the actors, but in our post crashing world, I sometimes have a little trouble buying into the drama of stand up comedy as like a tragic, broken person thing. So, I saw it as like a promising start, but it didn't grab me as much as the next episode, which really grabbed me.
I felt the same way too, and I mentioned that to Sarah, and she seemed surprised. So, Sarah, what struck you about the first of the two episodes that CBS dropped?
Well, this is all right. I'm going to beat this guy, but having recently taught Twilight Zone in my class,
ooh, teach, just kidding.
Yeah, see, Egghead loves her showy woes.
Miss Sarah Bunting,
what is she doing here?
Thank you. That's Instructor Bunting to you. Thank you very much. I thought it was a little too long, the first one, but
I
also thought that, I mean, I don't know if this is a take on any old one, but we talked a lot in class about sort of the length of the various episodes and how they, in the original iteration with Rod Serling, like tried to make it an hour and then they were like, nope, that doesn't work, and dropped it back down to 25 minutes. And I did feel like maybe this one could have been shorter because it seemed like, well, we get it. And now we just have to see how it ends.
Yeah.
I think they both could have been half an hour, frankly.
But I thought that, I call this the punchline effect, that it's so difficult to thread the needle of like making the performance of or construction of comedy dramatic and mm-hmm. then actually showing the comedy is a mistake that many properties have made, Studio 60. So I thought that it did a good job with that.
Well, they did a good job by working the way around it. Like, there's actually no comedy in his comedy. The whole thing is that he just has to talk about people and people find it funny, with the caveat that then that thing disappears. So they actually, he wasn't really telling any jokes about anything that goes poof. He was just naming names, basically.
That I was also thinking, like, that as it went on, they, you know, broke the rule of threes and like all these other things, like the timing of it was not the best. But I also felt that compared to the second one, which I just feel like I've seen and has entered the, you know, culture on a DNA level, that if you're going to step to Shatner and Lithgow's versions of this, that's a bold move. But for that reason, like, I thought it was a clever twist, the second one. I thought it was a clever twist on, you know, because there are these things in the world now, podcasts, post 9/11, that weren't when the first two iterations came out. But there's just something about it that's like, it's impossible not to expect what's next, even if there's a twist on it. So I did like the first one better just because it was a little bit less trodden. But
You know, I, Sarah, I can see that. Like, I hadn't thought of it that way. The first one was a bit more of an original subject matter for like Twilight Zone-y kind of stuff, you know, especially because the second one is a direct remake of one of the most famous episodes ever. But so the second one got me more. Like, maybe because I do improv and even dabble in stand up, but I have trouble, like, weirdly, I have trouble taking it seriously whenever somebody's like, look at the tragic undercurrents of this person's life. I'm like, I don't know anybody like that. But it's sort of like I have a friend who's a jazz who studied jazz in grad school and then sort of was a session musician for a while. And he saw the movie Whiplash, which is like, you know, a movie about a dramatic jazz instructor and this grueling jazz school in New York, and it's very dramatic. And he said he just cracked up and laughed through all of it. Like, he could not buy into it. He's like, this teacher would be fired on day one. Like, you do not bleed when you drum ever. And he's like, I couldn't, but that movie's great. Like, anybody who's not a jazz musician, I think, I mean, a lot of people enjoyed Whiplash. You know what I mean? That, like, but this guy couldn't get into it. Sometimes I feel that whenever I see like live performers.
Yeah. That's why I couldn't get into Magic Mike, frankly.
right. Because for you, stripping is just a lighthearted.
Well, it's more the chiseled body, you know, and the gutters, really.
Yeah. You know that it's no big deal. You know, it's real casual. So for me, the second one worked for me because the second one I was like, okay, they're going to remake this iconic episode. And I sort of settled in for it. And then right away I was like, oh, they're doing it differently. Oh, I kind of like this. I was pleasantly surprised by the twists and so I bought into the second one a lot more. Even though they both looked beautiful and the acting's really good in both of them, and
yeah,
I felt like it's a promising show, but it might still be finding its footing.
I liked that they cast Krychek in that. I don't think that was unadvised either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As Tara said, as we were watching, that's a whole lot of Vancouver in these episodes. Watching these, and I'm a big fan of the original, at least until it started doing those weird live video camera stuff in the later seasons that looked terrible.
Oh,
and I never even saw those. Oh, yeah. You know, when you know that era of television where they were using video cameras that sort of made all the lights bleed whenever it moved? Like, that's what they were using, and it really takes you out of it. You know, for the classic Twilight Zone episodes, big fan. And after watching this series, which I think was competent, but I kind of feel like the new Twilight Zone kind of has like an order of operations problem. The original Twilight Zone, like the Twilight Zone as a place in the series, was like this mysterious place from which unsettling truths about America, about modern life are presented. in the new Twilight Zone, based on only the first two episodes, because all we got to see, I'm not really getting that as much. I'm getting that the Twilight Zone in CBS's All Access show is like a spooky place where spookiness happens, but they kind of forgot to work it backwards from a message, a point of view. I'm not really seeing the point of view that drives us to introspection that much. Like I feel like a lot of the original Twilight Zone episodes were, you know, morality tales or thoughts on the Cold War that was happening at the time. And I know, based on some articles I've read, that one of the next two episodes that I guess they're doing two episodes a week, or maybe that was just the first week.
Okay.
But whatever, episode three, episode four, we're kind of getting something that lives more in that Twilight Zone space that I think Get Out lived in. Like, Get Out is a Twilight Zone template.
Yeah, for
right?
sure.
Right, yes. Right.
And I've read that one of the episodes coming up is more like that, where it's very much in that Jordan Peele comfort zone or discomfort zone, as it were. And I kind of feel like the episodes we saw were just sort of like a J.J. Abrams mystery box, wet dream kind of thing. Like, this is the Twilight Zone. I can do anything. And at the end of it, do I have a point, or is it just that the Twilight Zone is this weird place where funky stuff happens? Like, I suppose you could bend any of these episodes to have a point, but I don't think it was like in the foreground like it was in the old episodes, the old series.
I think with any show like this, like Outer Limits, Black Mirror, you have sort of two ways that you can go with the concepts that like, you know, basically it's sort of a thought experiment, broadly speaking. So you can either start with the idea and then see where it takes you, and then you get to the end, or you can start at the end,
Douglas
with the
Adams
idea,
sure,
and work backwards from it. And exactly. So I think that the first one was the first thing. And the second one, I think they just were like, well, what if we rewrote this, you know, top three most famous all time Twilight Zone segment in this way? And I got the feeling that the first two were how the series was sold to the network. And I'm hoping that they feel free to get a little more weird as they're going forward, because some of this stuff just felt a little not dry. Like, again, I liked the episodes, but they just felt a little like very, very highly polished to get the thing sold. And I wouldn't mind seeing a little more. Like, get a little weirder, like be a little more experimental with the idea.
They're fine on the weird. I want them to get more pointed.
You know, David, I think they'll do that. And I'm basing this not so much on Get Out, but on Key and Peele. Because like Key and Peele was basically, I mean, I'm going to oversimplify a little bit, but like they'd have a bucket of sketches that were just straight up very silly characters. No point at all. You know, it's just kind of like a funny voice, funny, you know, these two brilliant performers. But then, of course, they had a lot of sketches that were pointed, that were sort of like commenting on something, you know, be it like, you know, Obama's anger.
Or the sketch with all the pirates singing about how to treat women.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Or even like they would have personal ones where like they did a sketch where Jordan is the only black member of an a cappella group. And then a second black guy joins Jordan and he gets jealous. So then to get revenge, the initial guy goes and joins the second guy's improv group where he was the only person of color. And they have this weird like revenge of being the POC person in a mostly white stuff. And like they've both done a cappella and improv stuff. And it was like so specific and great. So I was kind of and they brought like a Key and Peele writer with them to this show. And then Jordan also brought another sketch writer that he's done. He brought like his people from the comedy world. And I'm sort of curious to see if he can be just as precise with Twilight Zone-y premises as he was with sketch. And it doesn't sound crazy that he'll be able to do it. Like, Twilight Zone stuff is kind of analogous to sketch comedy sometimes. Like, you know, a weird take on something heightened a lot. So, I don't know. You know, I think Sarah might be right. Like, maybe these first two sort of were trying to satisfy a lot of nervous suits. Mm-hmm. And then when they're allowed to, like, kind of find their foot. I mean, if you watch the first two episodes of Broad City, it's good, but nowhere near as good as it would be even two episodes later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, you know, that could, Yeah, he certainly has earned the benefit of the doubt in my book. Yeah. It's just weird to see how many comedians are in this. Like, all the actors are comedians. Mm-hmm. The writers are all comedians. Even though Jordan is really good in the Rod Serling role, I still kind of smile when I see him do it. Like,
he seems to be about to burst out laughing, which I enjoy.
Yeah. So that's kind of it's both a strength and a hurdle for these guys. I don't know. So it didn't blow me away, but it had a lot of integrity. And I was like, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me for this to become great.
No, I could see it. I mean, you're right. I mean, all series suffer from, you know, having to sell it and also having to find footing after the pilot, and the signposts up ahead, as it were,
yeah,
seem to point that they are getting into a groove in subsequent episodes. I just wish they had one of those episodes up top, because I just didn't feel like it had the morality tale aspect that original series had with these two episodes.
Yeah. You know, in a world with Black Mirror, how do you do your own Twilight Zone, but also not be Black Mirror? I feel
right.
like
yeah.
you set every episode before 1999.
No right.
Yeah. There's just no technology in any episode, or technology is just great and not a problem.
Like, well, that's why I loved when every time they showed the MP3 player in the second episode, which I don't know if we actually said, it's a remake of Terror at 20,000 Feet, except sort of with many twists. But they kept showing this MP3 player that like didn't even look like an old style MP3 player from like the 2000s. Like, it looked like a transistor radio.
Yeah.
And when we see the back of it, it's a Whipple. Like, oh, that classic tech brand. We all know the Whipple. Like, it was like the scenes in Into the Spider-Verse where like all the brands are like just slightly off. It was the same kind of thing. Where
Pepsi. I mean,
yeah, it seemed like that was a nod to what Dave was sort of getting at, that like it feels like a different place. Like, this is not a recognizable world that we know, although he did recognize that podcast host.
Dan Carlin, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I recognized the voice. Yeah, I recognized the voice, and I was like, what the heck? I know I've heard that before, and my mind was going through celebrities until finally the credits are like, oh, of course, duh, the host of Hardcore History, Dan Carlin.
I love that they had him be the podcast voice. Like, that's... it's such a knowing, it's like someone who's listened to a lot of podcasts cast that guy. You
know, it's like yeah.
Pretty cool.
So this is on CBS All Access, as we said. I was asked today whether the show was good enough to justify subscribing to the service that I think probably a lot of people do not subscribe to. You can sample it. They put up the first episode, The Comedian, on YouTube for free, and we'll link that in the show notes too. But What do we think? Is this worth getting CBS All Access for?
How much is this CBS? $10?
Well, if you get it ad free, it's $9.99 a month. I think with ads, it's $5.99. Believe?
Yeah, $4.99, $5.99,
something like that.
I'll keep watching it because I already have All Access to watch The Good Fight. But if I didn't already have it, I probably wouldn't pay for it.
Yeah, it's the same problem we were talking about last week with Apple TV Plus. It's just like you need volume in the face of a competitor like Netflix, where they have hundreds of shows that are potentially in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
It is a good value proposition, Netflix. When you compare that for pretty much the same price for CBS All Access or even like Amazon Prime and this Apple TV thing, it's really hard to justify. Like, it's okay, but I wouldn't say it is such a good series that you want to start subscribing.
It's not that kind of series. Like, Twin Peaks was on Showtime when the recent season of Twin Peaks was on Showtime.
Yeah.
I subscribed to Showtime to watch it. Like, I was such a big fan of the original series that I was like, you got me. I want to see these episodes when they come out, which I then did not like. But I was like, but it got me to subscribe. You know what I mean? I was curious enough to not want to wait. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this is that kind of show. Like, It would have to be, or it was, this is another, it was like when Howard Stern first went to pay radio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he had fans passionate enough that they would follow him to a pay service. As great as Jordan Peele is, Jordan Peele doing sci-fi or whatever you call Twilight Zone is not enough. I mean, if it was Jordan Peele doing comedy, maybe. But this is a good, you know, member of the stable, because with this and the Star Trek show.
Yeah.
I think I might be on board with CBS All Access in total.
Yeah.
This isn't the kind of show I think that makes anybody have to sign up. I don't think.
Yeah. I got one last thought that I can't let go unsaid, and this is totally pedantic. But so in the second episode, when Adam Scott's character is still in the airport, there is a mural about the rocket to Mars or something like that. There's some, yeah, sort of, which apparently is a future episode, by the way.
Right.
That okay. whole thing. But the font they use for all the small print.
This is already the most you comment I could imagine. Saying. Yeah. You're talking about the sub typeface. Yes. Of a Easter yes. egg background shot yes. in episode
Kerning
two.
Truther, David yeah.
Oh my God, that's going on a business card. Okay,
Kerning
so
Truther.
The mural is sort of a 50s, you know, Forbidden Planet-esque kind of take on it, you know, with the fancy yeah, yeah. scroll font. But all the, like, information is in a font called Hobo. And if you don't know what that is.
Which we don't.
It's the Dukes of Hazzard credit font.
Oh.
It's the font of rural general stores from 1971 to 1977. And for some reason, this is on a mural about space travel that is potentially actually happening in this universe. And it really bothered me a lot that somebody didn't take the time to actually choose a period appropriate font for that.
I have a friend like you, Dave, who always notices in like period pieces, like typefaces.
Mm-hmm.
Like he would complain about typefaces in Mad Men that they was yep. like, that typeface didn't exist.
So did Dave. So did Dave.
But I do think it's sort of like, you know, nobody cares. I mean, and also just sort of like, does it seem like it should be there? It's sort of like when you do period pieces and it's like, oh, well, this 60s movie has a Beatles-esque band, but it's Kennedy's still alive, so you wouldn't have the Beatles-esque band, but it's like, eh,
no,
we're
no,
just
no.
all in a mishmash in our heads.
Let me paint a different picture, and this is only slightly right. askew from what they're doing here. It's Downton okay. Abbey, except the sign that says Downton Abbey is like in a lava lamp font from the 60s. That's how far away in time periods, you know, and usage these fonts are.
I don't know. Well, all right.
All right, it is time for Around the Dial. Everybody's talking about things they're watching lately on television. First stop, Tara.
Hi, I'm here to talk about HBO's best 1-2 punch comedy lineup, Barry and Veep, which are back. We have seen the first 3 episodes, although as of this recording, only one has aired, so I will try to be careful about spoiling stuff in future episodes. Veep is in its final season, season 7. It's time again for the presidential race. So we're in the primary at this point somehow. I mean, mirroring the actual current primary season where people who have no business running are running. Jonah is running, which is very funny because since we saw him last, he has acquired a wife who is like was once his stepsister and has somehow not figured out that's going to be a problem for his campaign. Anyway. Selena is still a terrible monster and is maybe worse than ever before. And it's still, you know, there's not much really you can say about it. It's still very good.
Still good.
And Sarah, just for you, because I know you don't normally watch the show, but William Fichtner appears in one of the early episodes as a like Peter Thiel / David Geffen type of except closeted no. gay financier. Aww.
It's a different kind of product. Yeah, you got me.
What I'm more interested in talking about is Barry. I just read the big New Yorker profile of Bill Hader last weekend, where past guest of the show, Jim Poniewozik, is quoted as saying that the finale of the first season of Barry is so good, he never wanted to watch it again. I understand what he means. Like, yeah. It's such a good show. But at the same time, if it had ended on that finale, it would have been amazing. That's not to say yeah. season 2 from what we've seen of it so far is not really good also, but Jesus Christ, that first season was good. We just rewatched all of season 1 in preparation for the season 2 premiere, and man, it's good. But yeah, the way it's similar to Breaking Bad, the show, in the ways that they have to write themselves because of the crime / hitman aspects of it. They have to write themselves harder stories and then figure out how to get out of them, which is like interesting to watch from a plot perspective. But on top of that, like Bill Hader's performance, like there's not enough great things to say about it. Like to say it's amazing is feels like not sufficient. He's so good in this role. And the stuff that they have him doing in season 2 is especially good. He's now trying to, while avoiding the police investigation into the last murder we saw him commit in season 1, he's also just trying to get out of the life and commit to being an actor, although that has its pains also, which include working at Lululemon, which is really funny place for him to work. And then in future episodes, he's also still entangled with NoHo Hank, one of my favorite characters on TV right now.
Yeah.
Is that the hitman who's bald? And
yes.
He's so funny.
He's so funny.
I mean, like, I saw the first season. I liked it anyway, but that character, I was like, I think he's adding like 30% of my joy of this whole series.
For sure.
Waiting for scenes with him. He's so great. It's like a Lance in the other two.
Yes.
Sort of like not really a central character, but so funny every time he opens his mouth that I just am amazed.
That's a great analogy. God, I love Lance too. But yeah, NoHo Hank has some problems to dig out of himself, and he wants Barry to do it, and he tries to threaten him, and you know, stuff happens. So Barry tries to basically like strike a bargain with NoHo Hank about how to get out of his hitman responsibilities while still like, you know, getting jobs done and maintaining like keeping his hands as clean as they can be. That, you know, gets into interesting questions about like how complicit are you in acts that you don't commit yourself, but that you also don't stop. I mean, it's so much more than you expect a show about a hitman trying to be an actor to be, but they've just thought through every single thing. And I mean, speaking of sharply written, like there's not a wasted second of Barry ever. So I feel like I've oversold it. Barry is really good. You should watch it. Yeah. And we find out more about, Sally's backstory too that we didn't know before, and that seems to be getting into some interesting areas too.
For the longest time, I couldn't tell where my hatred of that character ended and the portrayal started. That character, I just like gets under my skin so much.
This is something that keeps getting reported because apparently at a screening for the show in season one, an agent said the same thing, that he thought Sally was very annoying, and a writer for the show, Emily Heller, had to be like, Barry fucking kills people. Like, it's true. Like, she is Sally is an irritating, self-involved actress, but Barry is literally a murderer. Like, you know, this is what TV does.
I wasn't making a relative judgment. I was just,
I know that. I'm just saying.
I was just saying that characterization is so pitch perfect for where they want the character to be. That is like kind of like a sandpaper character. It's you have to remind yourself that is the character they wanted, you know, and the actor is just doing a bang up job of it.
Yeah, she's great. Sarah Goldberg. Canada's own Sarah Goldberg. Anyway, Veep and Barry, Sunday nights after Game of Thrones soon. Currently after The Case Against Adnan Syed, I guess. I'm not sure what's before it now. Anyway, we mentioned this last week, but I'll mention it again for my plug. Again With This has started its coverage of Melrose Place. And the episode that just went up this week is of the Melrose Place pilot. So many terrible 90s fashions. You could not even conceive of how terrible they were. It's super fun to talk about, and I'm definitely less familiar with it personally than I was with 90210. So we are having fun alternating those and 90210s as we wind down the rest of 90210 season 10. Good God. So check that out again With This podcast and AWT90210.com on Twitter.
It was again with this podcast.com and at AWT90210 on Twitter.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. Will, what do you got?
All right. So the show I've been watching is the Netflix anthology series Love and Death and Robots, because I guess I only watch anthology series now. And I hadn't heard about this show. It just sort of showed up on my Netflix recommendation. I don't know if it's one of those shows that is showing up on everybody's thing the way like Bird Box did, or if it's just that they know that I watch a lot of sci-fi nerd stuff or whatever. But I hadn't heard of it. It showed up. I watched it. And I'm really digging it. It's not perfect, but I love it, I think, because of its flaws. It's basically like short, like less than 15 minute, all animated, kind of like pulp fiction sci-fi stuff. Lots of violence, lots of sex. It's sort of like the late 70s magazine Heavy Metal, which was like... sexy robots for like nerd boys or whatever, or like sexy aliens, but tended to be drawn by actually sort of amazing illustrators. So you'd have this really kind of juvenile content. This is the old heavy metal magazine, but sort of like impressive art that became like its own genre of style. Like I think like every Iron Maiden cover looked like a heavy metal magazine cover and stuff.
It was kind of like a magazine of Vans from painted Vans from the 70s.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Like
women in leather bikinis riding polar bears into battle, etc.
Yeah, but with like eight arms and like you know, a bulldog that is made of diamond or something. This show is similarly like garish, but also how'd they do that? And to that van. It's not quite as juvenile or like problematically bikini ridden as old heavy metal. But I mean, although it does have some episodes that are like that, it's more violent and like kind of gallows humor.
Okay.
It's better than what I'm saying, but it is not.
Is it like a cathartic show?
It seems like indulgently fun. It seems like somebody's like, you know what? I like those old juvenile stories. David Fincher is one of the creators of the show. It's like, let's make every episode look amazing. And they all do look amazing. Wildly different animated styles, all really good. And let's not worry. Let's have the story go farther than you think in 12 minutes. Like they heighten incredibly fast and then it's over. And I think the short length is a part of the reason I like it. If these were half hour episodes, I don't think I would dig it. But it's like premise gets established, couple things happen, huge climax, you're out. And I'm like, ooh, I'll watch the next one. And there's 18 episodes. I'm through like 9 of them. The first episode is going to be really self-selecting. Like if you're meant to watch this series, you'll like the first episode. And if you're like, no thanks, it's probably done its job of saving you the time of watching. Like it's a really violent sci-fi gladiator episode is the first one.
Isn't that type of episode a service to us all? How many times have we said, you got to stick with show X for like 3 episodes, 4 episodes, the second half of the season. And you're just like, I don't have time for that.
No one has time for that.
Tell me what this show's about from the get-go. Totally.
Yeah, I think this does a good job. The first episode, it's like, hey, are you in on this? You know, and I think it's good. And it
so like a violent Adult Swim show.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Or like Liquid Television.
Yeah.
It sounds sort of Aeon Flux-y.
Yes, exactly. It's Aeon Flux, maybe funnier than Aeon Flux. Like it's got a little bit more of a self-aware sense of humor. yes, there was like zero humor in that show. Yeah, so
you know that giggle fest, Aeon Flux.
Yeah, right. I think you're right, Sarah. I think this is like people who saw that as kids and are like fondly remember it and are sort of trying to recapture the kind of slightly forbidden but weirdly exotic look of that. I think that's probably exactly.
Nice. And Will, you are involved in many, many podcasts from to and fro across the universe and internet. Why don't you plug a couple?
The one I'd like to plug is called Screw It. We're just going to talk about Spider-Man, which is my brother and I just talk about old Spider-Man comics. Although we're changing it soon to just be Screw It. We're just going to talk about comics because we're just going to broaden it. And I know the world doesn't need 2 middle-aged dudes talking about their comic book collection, but we did it anyway. And my brother and I grew up reading them together as kids. And then we were, because of like family drama, we were sort of like separated for a while. And then as adults got back together and found ourselves most happy to talk about our comics again. The comics have a very fond place in our relationship as like a thing we go back to like – strengthen our friendship. And so the podcast is kind of me and him talking about our comics and us reading them. And I'm a fan of my own podcast and I would love it if people checked it out.
Also, if you want to listen to Will Hines, he was recently on Comedy Bang Bang as Randy Useless. Is that correct?
Useless session musician. That's right.
It was really funny. You're always good on Comedy Bang Bang, but I really enjoyed it.
Oh,
it was like a couple
listening.
Weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you listened to it. I don't know if you guys have ever listened to Comedy Bang Bang, but I never did before I was on my first one and I didn't realize how insane it was. And I go in now with like an occupation and no other backstory. And then I just say yes to any question anybody asks me. And just by the end of it, it's so crazy. So it's just If you listen, I don't know. If you listen to an episode of Comedy Bang Bang with me on it, I don't have any idea what's going to happen. And just anytime anybody asks me anything, I go, yes, that's right. And then I just talk about that.
It's really good. Definitely check it out. We'll put that in the show notes too.
Thanks.
Sarah D. Bunting.
I am here to talk about ER. I know everyone else did their marathon rewatch when it dropped like a year ago. Was it a year ago? Was it 2 years ago?
On Hulu? Yeah, that sounds
right. I have no sense of time anymore. I am just now watching shows that started like in the 50s. Anyway, I'm just getting to it now because I had to teach Love's Labor Lost in class last month, an experience that scarred me all over again. And like two dozen 20-year-olds were like, oh my God, do we have to watch it again in class? I was like, no, we can just talk about it and hold hands. So then I just sort of like, it was on when I queued up Hulu the next time. And I was like, all right, well, I'll just keep going. I am now partway through season two. It's really interesting to watch these episodes right in a row, knowing which subplots you can safely zone out for because they either go nowhere or you don't care, or they go nowhere and you don't care. And it's also really interesting to see how they were trying to position certain characters and how that doesn't really hold up all that well anymore. Like Doug Ross is a character that we are supposed to side with, but he's more of a petulant dick than I think the writers intended or than he was received at the time. Possibly because a guy who was not so much in control of his acting craft back in the mid-90s was Mr. George Clooney. I know it's received wisdom now that he was the Cary Grant of the 21st century, but back in the 20th, he was coasting on looks big time. it's not that he didn't work it out, but I clock Luke Perry all the time for, may rest, for thinking that tilting his head is the same as acting. but understand that both he and the Clune paid their rent with that shit for years and, you know, good for them. Anyway, I'm mid-second season right now when Mark is about to have the midlife crisis that basically lasted until he got a brain tumor. Spoiler. And Ron Eldard is on it and his peak Foxy sideburns Ron Eldard. And it's such a hey, it's that guy fest. It's so much fun. In a recent episode, I think we had 24 bad president Gregory Itzen, Arthur Miller's sister Joan Copeland, and oh God, who was the other one that I was like, oh, it's you. Oh, Joanna Gleason. And was, I mean, like one episode, it was amazing. If you want to join me on it, this Hey, It's That Guy journey, it is on Hulu, and I look forward to your comments on Twitter. Speaking of comments on Twitter, my plug is for my music podcast, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs, in which Mark Blankenship and I talk about songs. We have recently completed the March Mastass bracket of 80s British pop bands. Duran Duran has triumphed. As I think God always intended.
What were the other? What were the final four?
The final four was Duran Duran,
Tears for
Fears, U2. Yes, we know, technically not British. And what was the fourth one? Oh, Tears for Fears,
right?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh wow, great picks.
So yeah, it was really a battle royale, and so if you want to check out all the bloodletting on our Facebook page, which is where all the voting took place, that's facebook.com/mastass.podcast. I will link it in the show notes. And Patreon supporters are currently voting on which of the winners' singles we will be contemplating in our wrap-up episode. So
I voted, and it looked like my vote was leading the pack yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Who is is it still Skin Trade out in front, or has that changed?
No, I don't know. Yesterday, I voted for Rio, and that was in first place at the time.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll see.
Okay, so I want to talk about a show that we watched half of on the weekend called Deadwind. So this is another Nordic noir, and maybe the Finnish are not as crazy as their Swedish cousins, but Deadwind is not as cuckoo bananas than outings like The Bridge. And if you haven't watched Nordic noir before, they usually have like a Luther-esque regard for realistic situations, which is to say they don't. The bridge starts with like a murder where somebody's body is exactly split, literally split between the border of two countries on a bridge. But this show called Dead Wind Here on Netflix follows a detective. And in all these shows, it's always a female detective, usually in her mid-30s or so. And this one follows the recipe. She's investigating the murder of a woman who's connected to a Helsinki construction company that's like at the tail end of, I don't know what you call it, like an influence campaign to gain permission to build a new city of the future bottle in town. And she's going back to work just after her husband died. So, you know, there's the human angle.
She's got a lot of hair and a lot of sweaters.
A lot of hair, a lot of sweaters. She's like a brass tack sort of investigator. She really is like as written for the, as far as her police work goes, she's like a 50-year-old and a 30-year-old body. Like,
yep.
She really can't stand for the bureaucracy. She doesn't want that new rookie on her back, et cetera, et cetera. It kind of feels like almost, if you're a fan of the genre, like a first draft of The Bridge before they layered more and more like idiosyncratic elements on top of it. It feels like a more earthbound version of The Bridge or For Bedelson or something like that. It's steady so far. It's not like a water cooler show in the same way than these other ones, just because it's not bonkers like the other ones, like stupid, crazy stuff. It doesn't happen every week. It's more of a crime story.
It is, but I will say that like For Bredelson and The Bridge, it does have a lot of red herrings. Like we didn't look before we started the season how many episodes it was. And when we got to episode 5, I was like, well, this feels like the next one's the finale. And it's like, nope, there's 12 episodes, like not even close.
But the difference, I think, between this show and the other shows and their red herrings, and you're totally right, that is like a staple of the genre. But usually in those other shows like The Killing, the red herring is almost signals a reset of the story. Whereas this one, it's a, like a, it's a minor setback or it's a side case or something like that. Mm-hmm. They're always building on the main story in a substantial way, I feel like so far anyway. So
you don't
feel robbed after the red herrings like I think people did in other shows like The Killing.
Well, especially the American version.
I mentioned this on our Patreon show, and I just wanted to mention it now since we're talking about Nordic noir. The show Get Cracking, which is not Nordic noir, but we were talking about a couple of weeks ago. There is a conceit inside the show that one of them is basically getting a job on a show like The Bridge. And I just thought the description was so perfect that I wanted to play the clip. So this is from Get Cracking. They are in the middle of a meditation episode with Karen, and they're talking about this show.
Hang on, sorry, Karen, what TV show?
Oh, it's just that, you know, that Danish serial killer drama, the tower, where a different body part of a politician's found on every floor of a tower?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're remaking that for the US.
Right. What would you be doing on it? Graphics?
Oh, nah, sorry, Karen. Nah, just, I'm being shortlisted for the lead detective lady. She's a genius who jogs a lot.
That is so true. Anyways, Deadwind, it's like a slow burner recommendation for me.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. This extra credit topic is called Again with This from Dave the Poker Pro. It is a nod to our sister podcast, which I just mentioned, Again with This. And Dave the Poker Pro asks, what other TV show needs an Again with This style episode by episode deep dive? Pick a comedian host to dissect and a member of the cast or crew to tell tales from behind the scenes. What burning question does the podcast answer during its run? When I thought about this, I remembered when we first got the Golden Age Simpsons DVDs and watched every episode that we had seen 1 million times, but this time with the commentary on, which this is basically what that would be. And I thought, what other show would I want that experience with? 30 Rock, another show that I've watched all the way through many times. And for my hosts, I'm going to go with Steve. I think it's pronounced Healy, the cheese guy. Dave, cheese drop, please.
That's not that much cheese.
That was him in a minor role on the show, but he was also a writer on it and is now writing on Veep, actually. And Scott Adsit is my cast member because I feel like he probably doesn't care about pissing people off and would like tell the truth about shit that happened. And what I most want to know from him and everyone else who they could possibly get on it was, at what point did Alec Baldwin start becoming a monster? Was he a monster during that production? Because I'm just so curious about his trajectory. He was just in the news last week telling Howard Stern that what the lesson that he took from court-ordered anger management was that he was not actually that angry, which no, but sure. But yeah, 30 Rock is a show that I love and yet has a lot of, in retrospect, even like from, you know, 10 years ago or so, problematic elements that I would love to see hear two thoughtful people talk about. So that is my pick. Will.
Okay, mine is bad. I want, there's an old TV show called It's Your Move.
Uh-huh.
And it stars Jason Bateman post Silver Spoons, which he was right. Like as a kid star with, you know, Ricky Schroeder. But he's still a kid on this. And it was like one season, and I think it failed and was forgotten about. But I was like, I don't know, 14 or 15 when it came out. And I remember thinking it was great. It was like one mm-hmm. of these shows that nobody was watching and no one was talking about. And I said, this show's like funny and smart and meta and breaking the fourth wall and crazy. And nobody got into it. So I would I would watch it again and I would listen to people talk. I would call it It's Your Move. Was this a good show? That would be my – so. And every episode they'd be trying to answer that question like, so is it a good show?
Well, according to the internet – it's got 8.2 in IMDb and 9.1 on TV.com.
Gosh.
You have 18 episodes to work with.
This feels like something you could probably get Jason Bateman to do on like a Stitcher original. I bet they could probably pay him enough to do it like as a goof.
I mean, I remember, yeah, he was great on it. Like he plays a teenage con man who has a attractive single mom, and the neighbor across the street is the original neighbor from Married with Children before he got replaced with the better looking guy who's
right.
I forget.
Ted McGinley.
Right. David Garrison is the actor's name. He lives across all. He's a grown up version of Jason Bateman, also a con man. So they're kind of trying to maneuver against each other in the Jason trying to stop his mom from dating this guy and the guy trying to win her affections.
Uh-huh.
But it ends up mostly just centering on Jason's life and his schemes at his junior high school, tried to get away with stuff and not have to study for tests or something. Mm-hmm. The actor I'd want on it is he had a best friend named Eli, played by, I'm seeing here, Adam Sadowski. Mm-hmm. Don't know if this guy did anything, but I remember thinking, that guy's hilarious. And I would have him on to let me know the behind the scenes. One episode I remember like was all about whether Eli was good at soccer. And it ended with a big game. And the opposing team kicks a ball toward the goal and Eli leaps for it and they freeze frame him in the air. And then there's like a big long scroll of text going, you know, it doesn't matter whether he blocked it.
Wow.
What matters is that he tried and like, let's give the guy a break. And just like this huge long break of text. And I remember being like, is this for real? Like, are they doing this?
For 1984.
I was going to say.
Yeah. Pre Joss Whedon,
pre Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Pre aware of like just tropes. The final episode they called Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen, which is also the name of the last episode of MASH. Sort of like in 1984, to title your last episode of this nothing series the same title of the, at that time, most watched television episode in history. I think it's funny. All right, that's all.
Sarah.
Instead of an 18-episode show, I'm going to pick one with like 5,018 episodes. Supernatural.
Oh, God.
It's going to be called Supernatural History, and it'll be like Drunk History. In that it's hosted by Derek Waters and Jeffrey Dean Morgan is the cast member who comes on to talk shit, but it has to be a think while you drink affair.
Yep.
And it lasts an hour and they just see how long they can remain coherent while trying to summarize the plot. And then the fun of it is that like, even if they're summarizing the plot in like minute one, when no one has taken a sip of brown liquor and it still sounds comprehensible, well, that's Supernatural for you. Because there's like, you know, devils, archangels, and whatnot. So I think I made it through a season and a half of that show. Not because I didn't like it. I just I don't know, stopped watching it. Mm-hmm. But I would still listen to that.
Yeah.
I like Drunk History and I like Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
That show was on at the gym today and I thought that's about right. that's the show you put on when you're on the treadmill. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So mine, I didn't really do a celebrity thing just because the podcast of the show I need, which is G.I. Joe, the cartoon, doesn't really lend itself to a celebrity because we have lots of other types of people we absolutely need to talk about G.I. Joe. First of all, you need a genuinely non-ironic fan of the show, which probably means some sort of mid-40s man-child. That is your number one host. You then want to pair them up with a military strategy guy or probably even better, like a coffee table war book expert, you know, like, you know, the kind of guy who learns everything from great tanks to the Eastern Front and then applies it to G.I. Joe. And they will, this person will commentate on the battlefield tactics used by G.I. Joe and Cobra during the episodes. Add to that, we need a team building expert with insight into group dynamics, which play a very important role in G.I. Joe. Not only is it G.I. Joe versus Cobra, but within Cobra, you got different factions. You got the Dreadnoughts. You got, you know, the twins that feel each other's emotions and pains and finish each other's sentences. And then add to that someone's mom as just the person who knows absolutely nothing and will ask the questions that nobody else can think of. Sort of like your reasonable person coming into it with fresh eyes.
Sure.
And each week, a guest is picked based on that episode's subject matter, which got like super crazy with G.I. Joe. So, for example, in the episode that we talked about a lot on this podcast, the Cold Slither episode, and to remind you, in which G.I. Joe and Cobra both develop competing rock and roll bands in order to win the hearts and minds of America, you would get, say, one of the members of Motley Crue, since they're hot right now because of their film.
Yeah.
So that is the show's structure. In a nod to the excellent G.I. Joe spoofs, we're going to call this podcast Pork Chop Sandwiches. And I think it has potential. I don't think it works with a celebrity guest, but if anybody has a suggestion, I will throw it into the mix. It is time for the Canon user submission this week. Here we go.
Hi, Extra Hot Gang. This is Leisha. My wife and I have been listening to Extra Hot Great since the early Mach 1 days, and so I'm happy to bring something for the canon. EHG has had a very track record with cartoons and kid shows, but after the masterful submission of that Sesame Street episode, I had to try. So it is with some anxiety I submit Steven Universe Season 3, Episode 8, Mr. Greg. The episode abruptly begins with an awesomely psychedelic ad for a burger shack called Pepe's Burgers.
Whoa! Your song is on TV!
Yeah, apparently Marty sold my song as a burger jingle and now I'm filthy stinking rich!
The sweet stench of success.
Through some efficient exposition, we hear Greg, Steven's dad, has been gifted untold millions from his former manager in the form of royalties for this song, which Greg explains was not about burgers at the time. Pearl, one of the anthropomorphic magic gems Steven hangs out with, has seen the video too, and Pearl seems distressed and slightly sad. Could this really be the song that wooed Steven's mother, Rose? Steven and Greg wonder what to do with their newfound fortune. The song they sing together, Don't Cost Nothing, is the first in this dun-dun-dun musical episode, and it provides some backstory.
Prowling around, don't cost nothing, singing a song. Don't cost nothing. How do I spend all this money? I'd rather just spend time with you.
You could buy a house and a car.
I guess that I can, but I've already got a van. I could put you through college.
But I'm with the gems all the time.
I could buy you all the finest courses online.
What if we took a trip?
Hey, you think?
Yeah, I do. We could take a vacation. We could go somewhere new.
Greg has been happy with his van and not living in a house. Steven spends most of his time with the Gems, so school isn't a big thing, and they both want to just enjoy each other's company. Excitedly, they progress right into the next song, Empire City, cough, cough, New York City, cough, cough. After a rousing highlight of why New York is the best option, Steven ends the song by inviting Pearl, which ends the whole thing on a sour note. Greg seems dubious, and even Pearl is confused. Pearl's line, "Past experiences have taught me three is a crowd," is a direct reference to the series canon that Greg kind of stole Rose's affections from Pearl. It's plain there is a capital S stoof between Pearl and Greg, but whatever, here we go. We arrive in Empire City to appropriate jazzy fanfare, and Steven and Greg have some fun throwing their money around. By the way, Pearl in a tux gives me life. The song, Mr. Greg, is fun in a way that makes you want to tap dance, too.
Hey, shake a leg!
Hey, shake a leg!
It's Mr. Greg!
It's Mr. Greg!
And he's here to spend his dough all over the town!
He's got the bucks!
I've got the bucks!
It's all deluxe!
It's all deluxe! When you're dining out with me, it's the finest steak and brie! And if I break a table, it ain't no... Whoa! Just bill to my bank.
$100? Gee, thanks!
Even Pearl is enjoying herself until Greg tries to capitalize on this moment. Pearl throws a wet towel on the whole thing and walks off. Later in the night, video games played, Bajillion Dollar Suite trashed, Pearl sings, "It's over, isn't it?" It's so rare to see cartoon characters really emote and cry this way. It is clear that Pearl feels real emotion for Rose, and the pain of being the lover who was left first for another person and then because of death is still very close. Yeah, guys, Rose is technically dead, technically Steven. It's Magical Gems. It makes sense. The song is sad and beautiful and likely my favorite of all Steven Universe songs.
I was fine with the men who would come into her life now and again. I was fine 'cause I knew that they didn't really matter until you. I was fine when you came. And we fought like it was all some silly game over her, who she'd choose. After all those years, I never thought I'd lose. It's over, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it over? It's over, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it over? You won. And she chose you, and she loved you, and she's gone. It's over, isn't it? Why can't I move on?
After the song, Pearl is shocked to see that Steven and Greg were listening the whole time. Awkwardness ensues, and Steven convinces Pearl and Greg to talk it out in the last full song, Both of You. Steven's statement that they were avoiding it, and he doesn't know why, is indicative of his age and the reality that if Greg and Pearl just talked it over, they might find some comfort in each other. Steven has a simple and innocent quality to him that makes it easy to accept his childish confusion and see it is actually tinged with wisdom. There is some cartoon magic here. Greg and Pearl are honest with each other, and this provides relief when, in real life, especially love triangles, things are messy. But this is the wonder of Steven Universe. If we could all be open and honest, maybe things would be easier.
You might not believe it. You might not believe it, but you got a lot in common. You really do. You both love me, and I love both of you.
Look, if I were you, I'd hate me too.
I don't hate you.
But I knew how you felt about Rose, and I stayed anyway.
That wasn't the problem.
Then what was?
She fell in love with you.
Well, you know Rose.
She always did what she wanted.
I know you both need it. I know you both need it. Someone who knows what you're going through.
The episode closes with some reprisals of old songs and evidence that the air is now clear between Greg and Pearl. Steven Universe is by far one of my favorite shows of all time, not just for its celebrations of openly queer and non-binary characters, multitudes of body types, and the depictions of neurodiversity, but for its willingness to tackle complex ideas in a children's show. As a queer adult, this is something I would have loved as a queer child. Stephen is often shown mourning and grappling with the death of his mother. Pearl and Greg mourn the death of a lover. Fusion, when two gems combine to form an even awesomer, more bigger, more powerful gem, is often a metaphor for love and relationships and is used to teach lessons about consent. Also, just that you should be a good person and enjoy people for who they are is basically embodied by Steven. I wish Steven Universe episodes were a little longer, and I wish this episode had my all-time favorite character, Garnet, but often the episodes with tons of characters are difficult for first-time viewers. Instead, I chose an episode that depicts Steven Universe doing what it does best, which is address complex ideas, happy cool tunes, and in general, warm fuzzies for all. Thanks.
Thank you, Alicia. Will, you are a guest. You chose this from available canon submissions by users. So why don't you take the first crack at it?
Oh, thank you. I had never seen this show, but my brother, who I do that podcast with, I talked about before, has raved about it to me. And my brother is extremely fussy about all animated shows in the in the manner of a true comic book nerd. But he raved about Steven Universe. Like, he couldn't say enough good things about it. And it was one of the, it's one of those shows that I'd just been meaning to watch, but for whatever reason, hadn't gotten around to, you know, for no definite reason. So I mean, that's why I picked it. I wanted the opportunity to see it. And this episode blew me away. I was so moved and so happy and so I cried during the It's Over song, and I didn't know any of the backstory of the characters. I went completely cold, but I picked up on everything. And it's so gutsy. I mean, it's so amazingly agile for this show in such a short time to cover such emotions and also to include such normally deal-breaking topics of like a dead mom, an absent lover, the complicated nuance of adults who were rivals. This was a great pick, Leisha, because it won me over wholeheartedly. It's an amazing episode of television without question. And this, and the opening song, the opening Pepe's Burger commercial jingle was so funny, so like sure-handedly funny. And I didn't know at that point that it was a musical episode. I was like, oh, I hope they do more songs. And then the whole episode was basically all songs. And I was delighted for that. I don't know. I was completely blown away. I can't wait to watch everything. I'm going to watch the whole series without question.
Sarah.
Yeah, one of my canon criteria is, do you want to just let your streaming service roll you into the next episode or two episodes? That was definitely the case here. It was hard to believe how much ground got covered in under 12 minutes. There's like the funny, so like, first of all, the songwriting is really clever and catchy. You know, Bunsy, enemy of the musical. I really enjoyed all the songs. I also was like sourcing some things in the production design. This is a cartoon. I understand that. I still want that hot dog duffel bag. Make this happen for me. Listeners, just tell me where I can get one. I will carry it everywhere and name it and treasure it like a child. I also was won over quickly because one of my cats, Pearl, has like sort of the same. She seems to be grieving something that her humans don't understand. So I could sort of relate strongly to this character being like, I am not interested in fun, because that is what feline Pearl is like every day. She's actually meowing very faintly right now, just out of mic range. This show is really amazing and unusual because you have this joy and this humor and cleverness, and you also have this deep sadness that is not really resolved. It is ameliorated somewhat, like it's leavened somewhat by that song and that conversation, but it's not fixed. And these things are just allowed to coexist as they must do in life. And that, you know, if kids are watching this and sort of absorbing, like, sometimes this is just how life is, that there's, you know, laughter and humor, but also these empty spaces in your life. I found that very moving and beautiful and brave to do. That's really something to do in a kid's show. So So yeah, this was outstanding, delightful presentation. Thanks, Leisha. Kara.
I'm glad that Will said his comic nerd brother approves of the design because I thought it looked amazing. It has a quasi anime look. It's like a better modernized kind of Speed Racer look to the character designs. But every time we see Greg, he's got this like huge, you know, voluminous kind of grown out mullet.
It's the bald mullet. Sure.
Yes. It has the hair is almost a character unto itself. Like all of the you can get so much. Like, you know, we all were coming into this show cold. None of us had seen it before. And yet, like, even just the character design tells you so much about who they all are. And it's definitely true that the musical presentation gets across an enormous amount of information and backstory in a really economical way. And at first, because I didn't know anything about the show, that I didn't know what Pearl's relationship was to Rose. Like, was it her sister? Was it, you know, oh, nope, got it. So, yeah, it's really sweet and lovely and moving. And I want to also just mention a great voice performance by the pride of New Jersey, Tom Sharpling as Greg, Stephen's dad. I loved it. It was lovely. And I, like Sarah, it made me want to watch more of the show, because even though this is a very, as Leisha said, a very simple episode with just a few characters, you can still read into it, like how rich the world of this show is. And it made me want to know more about it. Dave.
Yeah. You said it's a sweet show. It is, but it's also very bittersweet. I mean, this episode was,
yes.
And that's such a rare thing to say about a kids episode of a show. Like, there have been other bittersweet episodes of, like, I don't know, regular show or something where people grow up and have to do things and people leave and that, but not on this level.
Yeah.
For how long this episode is, which is, you know, 12 minutes, is extremely economical in how they put everything out there, still manage to have like three or four songs, but not feel like you're getting the bums rush to the resolution. You know, it takes its time at the start, you know, as they establish a reason to have this getaway. There's a moment in the van when Greg and Steven are discussing what to do with this windfall. And there's a line in the song, or maybe it's just dialogue, about something about a breeze. And in that moment, you know, an actual breeze goes through the van and just like tuffles their hair ever so slightly. And there's something about that moment that just like immediately took me back to like those first memories of like going with your parents to a park or something like that. It immediately took me back to this moment in my life. I thought that was kind of amazing for a show that I just started watching 2 minutes before that. The amount of touchy to like America at large subject that this show will tackles in its short run is kind of amazing. And all that would be kind of impressive. But then you have to consider this is a kid show and how amazing of a message that is for a kid show and how rare it is and progressive. Like, this is the show, you know, mama, don't let your, you know, sons grow up to be, you know, megas, you know, like this is the show you start them off with when they're young, right? You know, like this is the kind of stuff that you want your kids to be exposed to. Ballsy, and it's sweet, it's bittersweet, and it's just sort of a very lovely show. And I definitely do want to check more of it out. Like Will, I've heard this show is great from so many people for so long, and it's just one of those shows that it doesn't really come up in like, let's start this show because it's a kid's show, right? And sometimes you just need an excuse to get started. And Leisha, thank you very much for that excuse. I definitely want to check out more. So with that, let us put it to a vote. Will Hines, officially, what say you, canon worthy?
Indeed, yes.
Sarah?
Yes, for me.
Tara Ariano?
I say yay.
And me too. Now that means Steven Universe Season 3, Episode 12, Mr. Greg. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Sarah has her winner.
I do. It's Law & Order SVU, which has been renewed for season 21, Blackjack, and is thus the longest running live action scripted show in TV history. Am I super happy that it outlived Mothership? No, but they're making it up to me by getting rid of, as Tara rendered it in the doc, Ben Stone's shitty ADA kid. He's like 40.
I stand by that.
Yeah, he's just not a good fit. If they really wanted to bring in the fans of Mothership who fondly remember the Ben Stone era, they would track down Michael Moriarty in his yurt in Manitoba, where he's running for Prime Minister of Israel.
Yep.
Not a joke.
No.
And put him back on the show, because it won't be dull. It's got to be more interesting than whatever Noah plot lines. Anyway, congratulations, SVU, and for everyone else who's refusing to quit this because they're completists. Here we go.
All right, Tara, who is our loser league?
Just to quickly back up to the canon, Leisha had called it season 3, episode 8 of Steven Universe, which is what it is on IMDb. But on Hulu, if you're looking to start with this particular episode, they have it as season 3, episode 12. Now, loser of the week. Oh, Tori Spelling. Not for running some kind of weird beauty MLM with Ian Ziering, which I just found out from both of their Instagram stories this week. She's also right now, she and Jenny Garth are in Tel Aviv, like doing on some kind of working vacation, something revolving around children's clothing. It's like, yeah, sure. That's where you go to launch your children's fashion line. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she's getting dragged by mom internet for a sponsored Instagram post and story for Little Bites Muffins, in which she characterizes these as a healthy snack because they don't have high fructose corn syrup. Like, pretty sure the rest of it is all pure garbage. Even if it's real sugar, it's not healthy for your kids. But
no. All the bad stuff drops to the bottom of the muffin. So if you cut off the top, it's all the healthy
shit. Got
and
it.
Also, they're small.
They are small. Anyway, I guess she has to make money off her 19 children somehow. Just kidding. There are five. Not kidding. There are five. And this is what she decided to do because her awful mother cut her off. So this is the world we all live in with Tori Spelling. Just give a mom a break. She just was trying to make some muffin money. As are we all.
Speaking about muffin money, do you know what time it is?
Muffin time.
Muffin time. We are playing the 10th game of the current season. Season scores: Sarah 4, still one away from the season victory. Value guests 3, Tara 2. Today we are challenging your knowledge of TV friendships in a game I'm calling...
I've seen your face before, my friend, but I don't know if you know who I am.
I've seen your face before, my friend, but I don't know if you know who I am, from Mademoiselle Caroline, who earns herself an extra credit. Guess the name, the full name, of a TV character based on the name of his or her best friend.
Okay.
If you need a hint, right, I'll give you the name of another character from the same series.
Okay.
All right.
So 2 points without the hint, 1 point with the hint. For example, I would say John Watson. You would say?
Sherlock Holmes.
Sure. And that, of course, is from Sherlock. Sherlock would be the hint. Note, a best friend cannot be another member of the character's family. So no Frasier and Niles Crane in this game.
Okay.
Tara, steel meal situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. I have one steel meal. Valued guest has one steel meal. So, Will, how this works is if Sarah or I answer a question wrong and you know the answer, you can jump in and say steel meal and you can steal the points.
All right.
With that in mind, let's throw it to Picky to see who is going to go first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. That means Will's on deck, followed by Sarah, then Tara. Are we ready to play?
I've seen your face before, my friend, but I don't know if you know who I am.
I seriously just finished writing down that whole title. Oh, I had a question, actually, before we start. If we guess for 2 points and we're wrong?
You only get one crack at the answer.
No free rides.
I think that's fair.
All right. So with round one, we're going to talk about comedies. All right. All these shows we're talking about are comedies. Are you ready, Will?
I am ready.
Rhoda Morgenstern.
Yeah, Mary, what's the character's name? Mary, gosh, Mary Tyler Moore. I don't know the character's name.
Yeah, you're almost there. That was Mary Richards. Mary Richards.
Of course.
Mary Tyler Moore. All right, Sarah, Ethel Mertz.
Lucy Ricardo.
Yeah, of course. All right, that is good for 2 points. For Tara.
Yes.
Adina Massoon, who's her best friend? I almost read the answer.
Patsy Stone.
Patsy Stone from?
From Absolutely Fabulous.
Correct. All right, back to Will. Yeah.
Just read one name, Dave.
Yeah, I know now. Who is best friends with Jenna Maroney?
Liz Lemon.
Liz Lemon from 30 Rock, correct. So the hint was Siri. Do you know what Siri's last name is in the show?
No.
Siri Xerox. Is what
okay. Yeah.
Excellent.
All right. To Sarah. Shirley Feeney.
All right. It is Laverne something. Laverne. God. I don't know if this is right, but what choice have I got? Laverne DeFazio?
Oh, nice.
Yes. Nice.
Leal.
Tara. A.C. Slater.
Zach Morris
from Saved by the Bell. Correct. All right, back to Will.
I mean, they were more frenemies, in my opinion. But sure.
All right, well,
you're overstating their.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Paula Proctor or Will?
Ugh.
Paula, I need a hint. Proctor. Your hint is White Josh. White Josh is another character from the show that Paula Proctor is in.
I don't.
I have another hint. You were on the show, Will.
Oh dear.
Was I?
Yeah.
Was I really?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea.
All right, that is Rebecca Bunch from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, a show that Will was on.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
I made a canon submission that included Will.
Did you really, that episode?
Yeah.
And
oh, cool.
Rebecca Bunch is sitting beside you right now in your room. Sarah D. Bunting, Garth Algar.
Oh, Jesus. Garth Algar. Why can't I remember Wayne's last name? Wayne. The musical fruit. Let's try Pruitt.
That's Wayne.
Steel Meal.
Steel Meal for Tara.
Wayne Campbell.
Wayne Campbell from Saturday Night Live is correct.
I couldn't think of it either.
I am now exhausted of Steel Meals.
All right, Tara, here's your actual question. BJ Honeycutt.
Yes.
Best friends with?
Hawkeye Pierce.
Hawkeye Pierce. MASH. Correct.
Woohoo.
Paul Pfeiffer, Will. Paul Pfeiffer.
I need a hint.
All right. Another character from this show is Winnie Cooper.
Right. Okay. The character's name, gosh, I don't know. Kevin Arnold is the actor, right?
Oh
is that
yeah.
that guy?
That's the character.
That's the
I thought that was the actor.
Fred Savage is the.
You
oh, good
know.
Heavens. I switched them in my brain.
Well done. That's why you just throw something out there. In desperation, if need be.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah. Jane Lane.
Jane Lane.
Yes, could lose the toad, but yeah.
No. Jane Lane. Let's have a hint.
Tiffany Blum Decker. That's a hyphenated last name.
Well, of the Intercourse Pennsylvania Blum Decklers, I don't know. Benson.
Anybody know it?
Yeah, Daria Morgendorfer.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
Oh, right.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Norm Peterson.
Cliff Clavin.
Cliff Clavin from Cheers, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, Will. Oh, Picky smiles upon you, I believe. Abby Abrams.
Ilana Wexler.
Yes, Broad City. Another show you've been on.
Indeed.
That's right.
Sarah D. Bunting, Anne Perkins.
Anne Perkins. Hint.
Andy Dwyer is another character on this show.
Leslie Knope.
Got it at Sarah, the yep. end, just nice. Before the buzzer. Nice. All right, last question of round one in our comedies section for Tara. Your yes. character, Patrick. Who's Patrick's best friend?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Sure is. And that is round one. Scores, please, Tara.
Okay. in some, I have 12 points. Will and Sarah are tied with 5 points each.
All right, don't despair because you two are now in... The Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Will, I'm holding in front of me a card from a mid-90s Trivial Pursuit TV box. All right?
Okay. All right.
You get to team up with Sarah because you're both tied for last place. If you get three of these six questions right, you'll get to split 2 points. If you get them all right, you get to split 4 points.
Okay. Here and we can go. We can confer with each other? Or
you may talk
this?
It out.
4 points? Yes. 8 points?
Yes. Sarah is right. They get double the max number of questions. So
my apologies. Yes. Okay. Yes, 4 and 8 points at stake. One of these days, I will remember the math. Starting off with classics.
Good luck.
What Army show's laugh track came from a live audience of GIs?
I know this. I'm just not sure how it's going to be rendered on the card.
You do know it.
I do. It's either Sergeant Bilko or the Phil Silver Show.
Yep.
It nice!
It's the Phil Silver Show, but yes, you are correct.
Oh,
that's
nice.
Instructor Bunting to you. The only reason I know that.
All right. Instructor Bunting and Will Hines, star of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Broad City.
Star, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sitcoms. Sitcoms this time. What 1983 sitcom's lead characters were Colonel Potter, Corporal Klinger, and Father Mulcahy?
Yeah, it's Aftermath, right, sir?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Aftermath.
Doing really well. 2 out of 2. Now on to drama. What intergalactic hero's life support system was frozen for 504 years?
Sarah, I know this. Do you know this?
I do not. Go for it.
I think it's... Well, I'm pretty sure it's Buck Rogers.
You are correct.
Nice! All right.
You've got 3... You've got 4 points to split between you. If you can get the next 3, we're going to double that.
Yeah.
What 1971 show did PBS aim at 2nd through 4th graders?
I mean, this is the right timeline for it to be. I missed what you said. So there could be Sesame Street. I mean, this is the right timeline for that. It could also be Electric Company.
Yeah, I think it's Electric Company because I think Sesame Street actually started in the late 60s.
Let's go with Electric Company.
Okay.
All right, Electric Company.
Woo!
Correct. All right. Stars. Oh, this is interesting. What sportscaster was nicknamed The Mouth?
It's Cosell, no?
Oh, yeah, let's go with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Holy nice. Shit.
Okay, it all comes down to this. This is the wild card category. Mm-hmm. You have, by my math, about a 1 in 7 chance of answering this correctly. Here's the question. What day of the week gave us the Love Boat and Fantasy Island?
That is Saturday.
I am comfortable with that answer.
Guess what, guys? You just swept the card.
Yeah!
Nice. All right, that really changes things. Let's get the updated scores. Everybody just
goddamn
got 4 points
right it
there.
Does. All right, well, I still have 12 points, but now Will and Sarah are both at 9 points!
Yes. All right.
Good Thank job, you, guys! It's been forever since anyone ran the table on a card.
That's the second time it's happened.
Amazing.
All right, guys, round two, same order. We're talking about drama and dramedies, all right? And sometimes the dramedies part's kind of loose, so keep that in mind. We're going to start again with Will.
All right.
Your first friend is... Suki St. James.
Best should be is. Easy, but I don't know. I need a hint.
All right, your hint is Luke Danes.
I don't know. Was I on this show? No.
No. best friend of Suki is Lorelai Gilmore from the Gilmore.
Oh, good heavens.
This is question 17.
I'm an idiot.
Ready, go.
For Sarah, Pacey Witter.
Well, he's more of a nearby shitheel than a friend, but for argument's sake, let's say it's Dawson Leary.
You are correct, Dawson.
Thanks, Pinky.
Nicely done.
Tara.
Yes.
Christina Yang.
Meredith Grey.
All right, back to Will. This is question 19. Who is the best friend of Willow Rosenberg?
Willow
Rosenberg.
Yeah.
You are not on this show.
No. Yep. Okay. I don't know.
Is this
last
a piece of information
name
we should provide to Will for the rest of the
I game? Just felt like I should.
All right. Willow Rosenberg, more commonly
Buffy,
known as just Willow.
Buffy something. I don't know.
Buffy something is half right.
Yeah, pretty close.
Buffy very close.
Summers is
yeah.
Answer. You're very close.
Yep.
Back to Sarah. Ryan Atwood. Ryan Atwood.
God. What was that little shithead's name? I'm going to have to guess. I'm not totally sure. Let's try Seth Cohen.
You are
nice.
Correct.
Oh,
from the OC.
Wow, nice.
Well nice. Done. To Tara. Tasty.
Yes. Oh, Poussey Washington.
Correct. Orange is in the
middle. Wow.
The hint I had to provide, I put chicken of myth. I don't know.
That's good.
Back to Will. Molly Carter. Molly Carter, you are not in this show, as far as
not
I'm
in the show. Okay, I'll take a hint.
Your hint character is Tiffany Dubois.
I don't know.
Tara probably knows this one.
No, I don't.
Oh, it is from a show called Insecure.
Oh,
oh yeah, Lisa
sure.
Ray's show. Yeah.
Of course, mm-hmm. of course.
Back to Sarah, Wallace Fennell,
Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars. From Veronica Mars.
Ooh.
That's correct.
Nice.
All right, to Tara. Ken mm-hmm. Hutchinson, and this is more of an action.
Okay, I don't know who that is, so I'll take a hint, please.
Your hint is Huggy Bear.
Oh, shit. Starsky. What the hell was his first name? I don't know. David Starsky?
Oh, man.
Wow.
What a Hail Mary.
Mama's family.
Yeah. All right. Everybody's last question, round two, coming up. This is Will's. Boyd Crowder. Best friend, too.
Boyd sounds familiar. I'll tell you that. I'll take a hint again.
We are talking Winona Hawkins is another character from this show.
These names are great.
Yep.
I love these names. They have a lot of style. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of personality.
They got some swagger.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll say, okay, yeah.
Nope, throw it out there. You did really well when you threw out the last one. Let's do it.
Oh, I mean, Winchester Yamaha.
It's sort of evocative of the character, actually. The first part of it, anyways. Tara?
Raylan Givens.
Raylan Givens from Justified is the answer.
Oh, good.
All right, to Sarah. Saul Starr.
Speaking of off with his pants, mm-hmm. This is Seth. Why can't I think of the name? Let me stall by asking for a hint.
You want a hint? All right. The hint, even though I think you know it, is Mr. Wu.
I mean, I know the show. I just don't remember the guy's last name.
They ran a hardware store together. Calls you out in the thoroughfare. We're talking about Seth Bullock.
Bullock. Right.
All right. Last question, round two, for Tara. Mm-hmm. Mary Beth Lacey.
Christine Cagney.
Yeah. Well done.
Wow.
All right. Wow. That's round two. A few questions left. Let's get the scores.
Okay. I have 19 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 15 points. Will has 9 points.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Same thing as before, but now you're on your own.
Okay.
All right. right, Will, we're starting you off with classics.
Good luck, Will.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
1948 presidential hopeful billed himself as the only candidate completely made of wood. Keep in mind, we're talking about TV shows. To read that question a different way, what character's FACO 1948 presidential campaign he billed himself as the only candidate completely made of wood 48?
Yeah, Pinocchio.
I don't know. Pinocchio adjacent.
Oh, Howdy Doody.
Yeah, Howdy Doody. Yeah, sitcoms. Yeah. Does Sheriff Andy Taylor drink alcohol?
I'll say yes.
Indeed, he does. Remember
Remember
the episode
where
he got really drunk and beat his wife?
He's a southern sheriff, Andy. You know. Yeah.
Drama. What show, rotating with McMillan and wife and McLeod, made up the NBC mystery movie?
Columbo.
Well done.
All right, you only need one of these last three to get your points.
Nice.
And this is a tough one, so you're not going to get this one. Who was the voice behind Kermit the Frog?
Yeah. Oh, God, there's no way to know. Jim Henson.
You know what? Yay! I think you would have got the last two as well. You could have ran this if you just, that first question.
Oh, yeah.
Who danced for the last time on ABC's 60th anniversary celebration of his showbiz career in 1990? Dance for the last time. Stars.
Singing in the Rain, Gene.
No, that's not the answer. Sammy Davis Jr.
I would have gone with Fred Astaire.
Yeah. I would have too.
All right. Yeah. But well done. You got yourself some points. So Tara, update the scores, please.
All right. I have 19 points. Sarah has 15 points. Will now has 13 points.
All right.
Well done. All right. All questions here are worth 2 points, but everybody has two questions only. Round three, I'm going to ask you a question. You answer it. 2 points for the right answer. Here we go. Will.
Okay.
Who calls his best friend Chocolate Bear?
It sounds fun. And I don't know. Anybody want to? I'm not sure.
Tara knows.
Yes. JD from Scrubs.
JD from Scrubs. Sarah D. Bunting, who calls his best friend Boner?
What the? Oh, Boner? I know this. Seaver.
Comma.
From the... It's not Tom. It's not my final answer. That would be a pretty funny crossover event. It's
your
not Chuff.
Your hint is Mr. Wu again, strangely enough.
Mr. Wu. It's not Seth. It's not Laverne. Seifert. No, the dad is Jason. So the kid was obviously... Evan?
No.
Such a good guess.
Mike Seivers. Mike Seivers of Growing Pains. To Tara.
Yeah.
Who
yes.
calls his best friend Guy Buttersnaps, Felicia Fancy Bottom, or Magic Head, to name a few?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Sean Spencer of Psych, who says that.
Oh, I should have just guessed Psych.
Yeah, I should have guessed Caroline. That. I took out the Supernatural question, so nobody answered Supernatural. Keeping in mind the author of this game time. Back to Will. Who calls her best friend a rainbow-infused space unicorn?
And to be clear, it sounds like some answers might be in here more than once.
The show. Yes, yes, yes. From the same show. Correct.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I'm going to guess again, Alana Wexler.
That is a good guess.
That's a good
guess.
I can
totally see that. We're looking for Leslie Knope from Parks and Rec.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
All right. To Sarah, who could be wearing any more of their best friend's clothes?
Oh, who's actually
who
wearing the clothes?
Be wearing any more
of their best friend's clothes? Who's wearing the clothes?
Joey Tribbiani.
Joey Tribbiani from Friends is correct. Last question of the game for Tara.
God, I taught that episode.
Okay.
Who gives himself embarrassing nicknames like The Deuce or Tinkerbell whenever his best friend concocts a new plan?
No, this one either.
That's Charles Boyle from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
A show that Will was on.
Yep, I was on it.
All right, scores, please.
Okay. I still have 19 points. Sarah now has 17 points. Will has 13 points.
All right. That was the end of the game. I don't know if that was clear when I started round three, but that
okay.
is
no,
it.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
Guess what, Tara?
Tara.
Here's the tiebreaker, which we're going to convert into a future steel meal.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I want you to ID both best friends from this list of activities. Are you ready? Shout it out if you know. Just looking for the characters' names. First names are fine. One of the things they did was surviving a zombie attack.
Rick and Morty?
Incorrect. Okay. Second item, creating a fake morning show without cameras.
Oh, Troy and Abed.
Troy and Abed from Community is the answer. Tara gets the steal. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot. Great. We traveled through another dimension for the Jordan Peele-led reboot of The Twilight Zone before going around the dial, where Tara elected to talk about Veep and gave Season 2 a Barry a shot. Will streamed Love, Death, and Robots. Sarah visited ER, and Dave finished up with Deadwind. We pitched some new episode-by-episode TV podcasts, and Leisha successfully pitched us a gem of a canon with Steven Universe's Mr. Greg. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
get that muffin money.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Well regulated.
And Will Hines.
Was I on this show?
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time, right here. Extra Hot Grade.
Pork chop sandwiches. Oh, shit. Get the fuck out of here. What are you doing? Go. Get the fuck out of here, you stupid idiot. Fuck, we're all dead. Get the fuck out.